The Heartbreak Hotel was an apartment building in Plainfield, Vermont, which provided affordable living to Central Vermonters for generations. This past July, the Heartbreak was lost to the Great Brook in a devastating flood. Reporter Erica Hallman talked with a number of the Heartbreak residents in the days after the flood. This is their story.
It was the sound, I remember.
The sounds are the rocks tumbling, the big, big boulders tumbling down the river.
We heard this sound, and we weren't standing right in front of it.
You can hear that it's huge, but it's dampened by all that water.
A sound that I attributed to a tree maybe falling on the place. I'm thinking, oh boy, a tree.
It smells like dirt. It smells like beets or...
And everybody ran over to the wall, and I couldn't see. It was dark.
And those poor cats were inside. That was rough.
A couple of the residents that ran over there said, it's gone, it's gone, it's gone.
That's Margie Yoder and Eli Barlow. They lived at the Heartbreak Hotel in Plainfield, Vermont. Then on July 10th of this year, on the anniversary of Vermont's 100-year flood of 2023, the state experienced another devastating flood, except in Plainfield, where Eli and Margie lived, it was more like a 1-in-1,000-year flood. 4 buildings, 4 cars, and 8 bridges washed down the Great Brook that night, including the Heartbreak Hotel. 12 people were living there at the time, and they all survived. Most of their beloved cats did not. The Heartbreak was situated on Mill Street along the Great Brook in the village. It was built in 1912 and housed local mill workers who were often down on their luck, which gave it its name. But for as long as anyone around here can remember, it's been an 8-unit apartment building. Some people lived there for months, others for 17 years. And by all accounts, the rents at the Heartbreak were several $100 less than most, and the apartments were much nicer than most. They were the best deal in town. And though much of Vermont is comprised of small villages spread out every 7 miles or so, there are very few affordable places to live in these villages. We talk a lot about affordable housing here in Vermont. We talk about the importance of community and village center revitalization. And for the better part of a century, the Heartbreak was quietly providing all three of these things at once until it fell into the river. In the days after the flood, I talked with a number of the residents who lost their homes. We sat on porches and in houses where they were camped out and in my car. This is a story about what was lost that night and maybe what it could teach us about what comes next. Here's Jake McBride.
The Heartbreak Hotel is known in town for being a place where people live for a few years and then they buy a house. It's like a gateway to Plainfield. And anywhere you go, I mean, I'd go to the doctor's office and the receptionist would take my ID and say, oh, apartment 7. I used to live in that apartment. I know several people who had, gone through a divorce and moved in there with their kids and raised their kids there until they could, be on their feet again and buy a home. It was really a microcosm of Vermont. If you look at the people who lived there, we had elders, we had children, we had single parents, we had teachers, we had retired nurses, woodworkers, nonprofit workers. I mean, we had, everybody in that building, people who maybe don't have all of the financial access to wealth, but have a wealth of community and really take care of each other. And it was, one of the last places that we could find that.
There's somebody who hears this and says, well, it wasn't your building. And you were living there. That's rough. But it wasn't yours.
That building belonged to everybody in town. I mean, generations of people have lived there. Obviously, there's people who quite literally own the building. But I believe we all treated the building as if we owned it. Just took really good care of it. Just loved the heck out of it. We put up our pride flags and gardened and grew vegetables on the porch, hung up our bikes on the porch, and we treated it like it was ours. Never in my wildest dreams could I imagine that the whole house would fall in.
Plainfield Village is right off Route 2 between East Montpelier and Marshfield, right off a famously terrible intersection. There's a restaurant, a small co-op, a church. Friday, there's a farmer's market in front of the church. I've been to a lot of farmer's markets in Vermont, but Plainfield is the only one where I've heard a harpist and someone with singing bowls. The Heartbreak Hotel was a block from the church, a huge clapboard building with wraparound porches on the front strung with lights and porches on the back that hung out over the river. A picnic table, a fire pit. It's the kind of place you see in every small Vermont village, a place that's been lived in for 100 years. You could imagine a horse out front or a 92 Toyota Camry. This is Julia Wilk.
It was such a funky building. Like, everything had just so clearly been refactored so many times. Everything was super slanty, and I remember many... If you drop something, it's rolling for a while, you know?
This is Hope Metcalf.
I didn't plan on staying there. Like, I had 3 children, and like I said, it was a one-bedroom, so a little too tight for a family. But every time we thought about moving... We just couldn't afford it. So my daughter was actually born in the bed in that apartment. My son, my youngest son, was born 3 years later on the kitchen floor.
This is Lucy Schmid.
In the summer, like, Hope and the kids were always just sitting on their porch, and the kids were like running around in our teeny tiny yard between the cars and the building. Like I watched her kids grow up, like, from my balcony.
I loved waking up in the morning and hearing the river running behind the house. That's one of my favorite parts, leaving the window open in the summer.
Definitely the river. I slept in the back bedroom, and boy, you could hear that river.
And I remember the spot on the floor in the kitchen where my former cat, Bruce, died. I had this tiny little block print picture of a cat taped down there on the floorboard, just a little Bruce commemoration.
Kyle would come home from work on his bike and ride in and say, hey, every day on his way home. You know, we'd hear Cora and Oliver getting ready to go to school, running around in the yard. And I never saw myself living in a communal housing situation because I think that I've often felt like, boundaries and having your own space is important. But this was just, it was perfect. You know, I'd walk down the stairs every morning and I know I'm either going to see Margie watering her plants or, you know, Hope and Cora and Oliver are getting in the car to go to school or Caleb's heading off to work at the car dealership. You know, I just know that I'll have someone to wave to in the morning.
This is Rose Hagen.
I needed to leave Pittsburgh. Being a trans woman, that was getting really hard. You know, I work in construction, so even more so, it was not feeling like a particularly safe place to be in Pittsburgh. And the stars were aligning that I just got this job that I've been dreaming about for a long time, and this apartment that's perfect for me, and far nicer and more secure of housing than I've had probably ever in my adult life. And the people in the building were so friendly and so incredibly welcoming to me at a time when I really needed that.
This is Kyle Brooking.
They're honestly the best neighbors anyone could wish for. Usually you live at somewhere and there's at least one person that you're like, oh man, watch stepping around that person or something, but it's not like that there. Like, you know, you get little notes from people and they're like, thank you for watching somebody or something, like watching my cats or something.
This is Jared Birchmore.
The Heartbreak is the center of life in Plainfield. It may not be the geographic center, but it's right located on the brook and next to the rec field, and all of our friends walking by, walking their dogs down the road, or heading down to play tennis or pickleball or head to the skate park.
All of the local teens would come by and cause trouble in the rec field. So we were the people who, like, stepped in when things got too rough. because we were right there.
And I mean, if you wanted to be part of the community, you'd sit on the front porch. And if you wanted some privacy, you'd sit on the back porch and just have the river as your soundtrack.
Oh, I can't walk outside without getting into a conversation. And we'd just be pulled into conversation after conversation. It's like, there was a lot of like standing in the front yard talking kind of thing.
Standing and holding a lot of bags and trying to have a conversation.
And compost.
Yeah, and compost and having a conversation.
Oh my gosh, Erin. Oh my gosh.
I think of the phrase, the intimacy of everyday life. The proximity. Like, proximity is invaluable. Where you don't always have to be planning to have people around who you could be like, hey, you want to go swimming right now? is everything.
My children and I would every day in the summer would go down there and swim in the river. That river was the river that nourished my children and myself for 10 and a half years. And that was the same river that tore apart our home. But like, that is life, right? You know, I wouldn't want to not have had that river.
The flood started on the night of July 10th. A number of the residents were away visiting family or waiting out the flood. Four of the residents were home. Here's Eli Barlow.
I was aware that there were warnings of more floods, but, you know, no way it could be the same as last year, right? No way that could happen again 1 year later. Crazy that it was happening on the anniversary, right? And then there was, like, the signal on my phone. I was within the area that they were warning about flash flooding, so I saw that signal on my phone. I went outside, I looked at the river. I saw it coming up around the lower side of the building.
We were checking in. So like, Caleb, Margie, and I were like, we're not leaving. I remember telling my children, we are not evacuating. Every time they come knocking on our door, they tell us to evacuate, and nothing happens to the building. I'm like, there's a huge retaining wall. I told my daughter, I took her downstairs. I was like, look, the whole basement would have to fill up to here. There's no water in here at all. This whole thing would have to fill up before it even touches our apartment. And I'm like, we're not leaving.
So eventually I went outside and asked, like, wow, how about this rain, huh? Like, like the way we used to do, where we'd just, like, go out into the yard and, like, see the neighbors and be like, what's going on here? And at that point, Caleb showed me, like, around the side of the building how the water had started to come up the side of the building into the basement. And he said, this is worse than last year. So as soon as, and he said, I moved my car. As soon as I heard that, I was like, I'm getting out of here. Like, are you kidding? So I started, like, just really quickly, like, running around. And I put the automatic cat feeder on the second floor and was like, okay, the cats are good there.
Then I think the bridge went out and the water started rushing through that gap. And then probably 20 minutes later, maybe a half hour, the building just collapsed.
I heard a humongous cracking noise, and Caleb and I were, I remember seeing Caleb's face. We watch as the building, it did not slide gently into the river, is what I've been reminding people. It actually collapsed, and then it got taken away downriver. And, you know, all of our neighbors' pets were inside the building. So.
We got a text from somebody that said the heartbreak is gone. And I don't know, maybe this sounds cold, but for me, I had, like, a really weird sense of relief hearing that. There was kind of this sense of, oh, I'm homeless now. I've been homeless before, a lot. I know how to do that. So that's a weird way to react to a tragedy. But I guess it's mine.
In the days after the flood, residents of the Heartbreak stayed at friends' and neighbors' houses. I asked them if they had some ideas about where to go next.
I was a nurse 30 years, and I retired 18 years ago. I have seen these people in town come together for many different things over the years, many different things. It's a very tight-knit group. It's a wacky group. You can walk to the co-op in your pajamas. Nobody cares. I do not want to leave the town of Plainfield. But do you realize it costs $5,000 to $7,000 to rent a place if you need first month, last month, and security? And I'm astounded. I'm astounded by the rents. Totally astounded. And even if you don't rent a place for $2,000, which I couldn't do, I'm on a fixed income, I do work a day a week, and I do some babysitting. There's no way I could afford the rents in Montpelier itself. I could not.
The Heartbreak was an incredibly affordable housing option. That was something that I felt was special about living there, was that we weren't all privileged economically. It was actually kind of a mix of different economic situations together, I think. And in Vermont, we've got a lot of like very small villages with houses kind of spread throughout the countryside along the roads. In a lot of cities, there are neighborhoods, but there's not as much green space. There's not access to nature. There's not, it's maybe a little big for those kinds of small town connections. So Vermont does have like a small town culture, but we just need more affordable housing options in those places. I think apartment buildings are not as easy to come by in small towns. And so many people have told me, and Lucy, I think, when we've said, oh, we live in side-by-side apartments with a door in between, so many people have said, oh my God, that's my dream. A lot of people want that. It's not very available.
The Heartbreak is a place that people could get started and not spend all of the money that they don't have because they're not connected yet. And that's exactly what it was for me, is I'm like at a new job that I don't know what it's going to be like. I'm an apprentice at this new job. I'm not making a ton of money here, and I don't know where I can have that kind of like safe, secure, stable place to live that is close to community and allows me to connect with people in the way that I need to. Having that kind of housing that is connected to others allows you to like get support in a place that you've only been for 4 months when something horrible happens. And that's like, that's a necessity. That's not like a, it would be nice. That is a necessity to like be okay and continue living in a world where things like this happen sometimes.
I did all the right things. I mean, I don't know. I went to college. I thought, you know, I teach at Twinfield now. I'm a kindergarten teacher. And I had this idea, this false idea that when I finally became a teaching was a real job. And when I finally became a teacher, I was going to make enough money that it was going to, everything was going to work out. And then very quickly I realized, oh, that's not going to happen. And very quickly I realized, like, I'm still living paycheck to paycheck and I'm still like not having a lot of options for me and my family. But now people recognize that we're struggling. They think it's because of the flood. But my neighbors and I are already feeling like insecurity and fear. Are we going to be able to afford our rent the next year when it goes up? Are we going to be able to afford utilities the next year? Like, we're already like, we already need help before the flood. But now we're on the news. I don't know what it is. People are feeling, I mean, I'm not saying that, you know, I'm not trying to blame people in any way. I'm just like, the abundance shocks me. Like, because when you have no resources, you don't realize how many people have so much resources. How people that have an extra house or an unused house or an extra apartment unused or an extra condo unused, the amount of people that can just donate $100 to $1,000 or the amount of people that can just buy food that I couldn't even afford myself, but they can buy it for me. Like, I've been shocked by that.
I think the parts of homeownership that are attractive are being able to control your own payments. Not feeling like the rent is going up every single year at a rate that you can't afford to stay, or that your neighbors can't afford to stay. Because just because I can doesn't mean my neighbor can. And, you know, we were a unit. So I think the idea of owning your own place and having control over it is still attractive. But I think what's less attractive about homeownership now, we're all realizing, is being isolated. I always dreamed of living up in the hills with a big field and no one around. And I think that's changed. I would love to live in close proximity to these people again.
I think I feel like painfully aware of the assumptions that people make of housing for people who are just at the beginning of putting stability together or having just hit a hard time, because I feel like I was in that for years, trying to like do that in Pittsburgh where there aren't these opportunities to do things. And I've lived in all the horrible kinds of places that you can imagine. I lived in an abandoned building for years that was literally falling apart around me. And I've lived in my car. I've done all these things. And it's just like, if you want to live in a world where people can actually start their life and build something out of their life, then you have to have these places that are like affordable and nice, affordable and let you connect to other people, because you can't connect to other people when you're living in an abandoned building. And when you're living in a car, people don't want to talk to you and be your friend. And when you're living in your car or you're living in an abandoned building, people don't want to support you. Radio interviewers don't want to come talk to you about your experience. People don't want to donate to your GoFundMe so that way you can be okay. I don't know how you expect people to ever get anywhere with their life if you don't have these places like the Heartbreak where they can land and start doing something different. Do you want to live in a world where people can get better, or do you not? You know, and if you want to live in a world where people can get better, you have to have places like the Heartbreak. And now that it's gone, I don't know how I'm going to find a place where I can keep getting better.
There was a really sweet little beach right off the rec field. I think that beach is gone. People had kind of like made a little wall of rock so that there was a pool that was not moving water, and toddlers used to play there with their parents, and I just think that the whole thing is gone. And it's just so hard to imagine what that will become, I guess. Will people find a different spot, or is it just going to be not part of the culture anymore?
You know, something like this happens and the news goes out, and the way that it's framed is, oh, it's an apartment building with tenants. And there's something about that that feels like when you've lived in a place for 17 years, that it doesn't quite get it. So what was this place for you?
Oh, wow. Boy, that's kind of touching my heart. I raised grandkids in that apartment building. We had the river that we enjoyed seeing change with every storm. They had a place to swim and to wade and to throw rocks in the river. You got to know people there. Kids went down to the rec field with their parents from very young until a lot older. That was a joy to see the kids grow up. But I think something was being able to count on my neighbors. That was a great flavor of things. I would ask, can you hang this curtain for me? Can you check my oil? I don't think I'm getting the right reading. Oh, they were always so generous. I could joke with them. I'm going to miss that. I'm going to miss my buddies. That's what I'm going to miss. We are the Heartbreakers. That's what we are. And that's about the size of it.
The water is muddy and the water is wide, but we will make it to the other side. The water is muddy and the water is wide, but we will make it to the other side.
Several weeks after the flood that destroyed the Heartbreak Hotel, Vermont experienced another devastating flood. In July alone, 482 people's homes were rendered uninhabitable. 65 of them were renters.
A shovel in your hand, doing what we can.
Since the recording of this show, Eli, Jared, and Jake have found a place to live together in Plainfield. Margie and Rose have also found places in Plainfield. Julia, Lucy, and Kyle are staying with family. And Hope and her kids have found a place to live together for the winter in Plainfield. Thanks so much to all the residents of Plainfield who sent me sounds recorded in town. The song you're hearing was written about the July flood by Plainfield resident and singer Heidi Wilson. This is Vermont Public. I'm Erica Heilman.
The water is muddy and the water is wide, but we will make it to the other side.